Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. We always enjoy our chats with our next guest. Former Titans safety Michael Griffin is on the line with us. Griff, what's up?
Oh, man, just finishing a workout, trying not to gain weight. Just living life.
I think we're all in that boat in 2020.
Hey, you know, you own a cupcake shop, you know, it's kind of a little tougher, so. You know.
No kidding. Yeah, that would be danger zone for a lot of people. How's that going, by the way?
It's going great, honestly. You know, people are still celebrating birthdays, and, you know, even though you're supposed to be quarantining and keeping your social distance, people are finding ways to get, you know, we're right by a lake, so it's almost like when you're on water, it does not apply to you on water, so. Boats and everything else, they just have a great time. So, hey, we enjoy it. It's keeping us in business right now.
You know, it's been tough to smile a lot in 2020, but cupcakes make people smile.
Oh, most definitely. Anything that's sweet. Who doesn't love cupcakes, I like to say.
Yeah, I don't know who they are. If they raise their hand, they should be shipped, you know, off to an island or something. That doesn't even make any sense. What do you make of the play you saw in week one in the NFL? No preseason, a different offseason for everybody, and everything else that's been going on as we just were talking about. What did you make of the level of play in the NFL in week one?
Well, you know, it's kind of weird because, I mean, as a former player, of course you don't like preseason games, but of course, you just see that with the offseason and everything else, I see a lot of injuries, and we saw that a lot back when we had the lockout. There was a lot of injuries just getting your body back up to speed with playing and things. And the main thing that I saw was I think the teams that were – their core players were intact offensive-wise. They excelled. They looked great. I think the guys who've added different players to their teams and here and there, I think they kind of struggled a little bit. I kind of looked at it like the quote-unquote third or fourth preseason game. It just actually counts. But I think it's going to get better. I think it was just a lot of new things that people had to get used to on the first opportunity to play against another team.
Something that jumped out to me, and we talked about it a little bit on yesterday's show, is rarely do you see, and I'm dying to hear your reaction to this, because a guy who played on the defensive side of the ball for so long, you probably felt like it was never called. I was surprised at some of the offensive pass interference calls in the league, and some of them a little bit controversial. Some I agreed with. One, what was your take on OPIs when you played in the NFL? And two, what do you make? Do you think there was like a point of emphasis to be looking for that? Or, I don't know, did that jump out at you?
Well, you know, I think the most controversial call is I think everybody's alluding to is the Rams versus the Cowboys.
Yes.
Again, it's the fact that when you see the receiver's hand fully extended, I mean, it kind of falls into that, you know, it's an OPI. I know, you know, people question Jalen Ramsey kind of having his arm hooked, but, I mean, it's one of those questionable calls. I think it could have went either way. And, again, that's just the what if, but the thing that I like to say is – quote unquote, if you don't put yourself in that situation, you don't have to worry about one particular play. So, on the defense side of the ball, I will say it was a great call just because, you know, you're glad to see those things being called. But again, it could have went either way. But if you see a wide receiver's hand fully extended, it's just part, it's an OPI in my personal opinion.
How did those plays work when, you know this, you battling, hand fighting all the time, and when you lock arms, like how do you handle that as a defensive player?
You know,
what's the best course of action?
It really, it's no way, and I tell people, you can practice every type of way, but when you're in the heat of battle, it's you just have to try to just do whatever you can. I mean, one questionable call I saw yesterday, even though they did score, the play where the tight end versus Kenny Vaccaro. I mean, he was within the 5-yard mark, and Kenny put his hands on him, and he kind of tripped a little bit, and they called a foul on, against Kenny Vaccaro, and I'm like, he's within 5 yards. He just shoved him, and he tripped. Why is that a call? So there were some questionable calls here and there, but again, I mean, the refs, just like the players, did not have preseason, so everything right now is, you know, everybody's knocking off the rust right now.
What did you make of – we talked about this earlier as well, and everybody had a little bit differing opinion. So let's get yours. What did you make of the Rashawn Evans ejection on the tight end? Did you feel maybe he was just trying to shove him away, or did you think he threw a punch?
I don't think he threw a punch, to be honest with you, because if there was, you know, more exchange, you think it would have been more of once he did. I think he was kind of like throwing like a push to like push him off of him, but unfortunately it came a little high. But, I mean, most cases if somebody does throw a punch, I mean, we've seen, you know, Khalid Tlaib versus Crabtree and stuff, when there was punches thrown, I mean, it was like I'm still trying to go at you. Even the Mason Rudolph situation last year, I mean, they were really trying to get after each other. So I really don't think that was what it appeared to be. Unfortunately, that is the rules, but I just didn't – it just didn't to me appear that his intentions was to, you know, like he was frustrated or anything. I think it was more like get off of me, like I'm trying to break just – and again, I think again, you know, it's crazy because you see, you know, Compton, he gets to come in after he just got signed, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And next thing you know, you never know when your number may be called. And next thing you know, you're starting linebacker for the rest of the game. So that's why you always got to be ready because you never know when your number may be called. But, I'm sure he's going to have to file that appeal and is going to get fined or whatnot. And it's going to be a tough situation. I mean, you go back and rewatch it, it didn't look as bad. But, I mean, again, rules are rules. And, you know, you're trying to keep the game safe.
We're talking to Michael Griffin, the former Titan. And, Michael, you know, you look at where the Titan secondary is right now. Let's start with the safeties, because I know you can really watch it closely here. You were talking about Kenny Vaccaro, who's been such a great pickup. But just give me your thoughts as you watch Kevin Byard. What makes him an all-pro level safety?
You know what? The thing that I say, and the people will agree to this, because one thing that I used to do is I know I miss tackles. I will agree to that. And I used to always try to go in for the hit or whatever it is. But the one thing is he's so patient when it comes to making open field tackles. And that's the one thing that he does that I think that jumps out to me, is that he's just a for sure open field tackle, guy that prevents big plays. I know yesterday there was one missed tackle that he had, but you very rarely see that, and that was Gordon. So, of course, that's a Pro Bowl, you know, type running back, a very quick guy, shifty guy. But, again, you watch the plays. I mean, he's just constantly just, for sure, open field tackler. He stays square. He doesn't duck his head or anything. If that's the thing that really, when you look at safeties and things, a guy that you know that can prevent the big plays. And one thing else is he's just always around the ball. So that's the one thing that really jumps out is, I mean, yesterday that play where he caused the fumble, and then towards the end, I that's one thing you never see him do is drop an interception. So he had opportunity there at the ball also. But, again, he's just a guy that when I read the story about, you know, him growing up and in the life that he lived and going to Middle Tennessee State, not being invited to the combine, third round draft pick, and again, just lived up to the expectations of, I surpassed the expectations that you would think somebody coming from Middle Tennessee State or not being invited to the combine, and just very humble. Very humble guy, a guy that, you know, there's a reason why he has a nickname as the mayor of Murfreesboro and things of that nature. Again, nothing but the utmost respect when it comes to him, because that's not only is he a great player on the field, a great player off the field, a good friend, a great husband, a father. I mean, you name it. It's like I don't think there's anything you can name that he can't do. So, again, the most respect, I think he will – definitely go down as the best safety to ever play for the Tennessee Titans. And I know you got guys like Blaine Bishop, Marcus Robinson, to name a few. And again, but just the things that he does at such a high level so early in his career, and he's just continuously climbing. And you say the sky's the limit. I think he can definitely go past the sky just the way he's going right now.
Michael, you've been in many game planning rooms where when you have seven or eight defensive backs in your stable and everybody is ranked and they have, you know, their role, it's a constant shuffle in the Titans already in week one. They learn on Friday they're not going to have Adoree Jackson. He's gone for the next 3 weeks. You're trying to get Christian Fulton up to speed. You got a rookie in Chris Jackson that you've thrown in there. And yet they didn't panic, and they were able to find a way to get done. You've been, I'm sure, in locker rooms where you've been on teams where they successfully can overcome some of that to a degree, and then other teams where there's a collapse because you have guys on there that just get exploited. What are the keys to having the former as opposed to the latter, where disaster happens?
Well, the thing is, if you got a good core of guys, you know, you got guys like Kevin Byer, guys like Kenny Vaccaro, those two guys, that they're paired very well with each other. They feed off one another. They've been in this game for a long time. Kenny Vaccaro, you know, ex-UT guy, so, again, I'm a little biased. But, again, when he stepped foot with the Tennessee Titans 3 years ago, I mean, he came in right away ready to go. And, again, he's that enforcer when it comes, and a very smart player. I remember him when he played at Texas, the young guy. I mean, he was really the only thing that Texas had, and he was the main captain of that defense. And he went on to play with the Saints, and they would have played many positions, and he's now with the Tennessee Titans and paired very well with Kevin Byer. So when you have a good core nucleus guys, and again, I applaud Logan Ryan, who came from the Patriots and was able to, you know, I would say kind of help and mature these young guys from coming from the background that he came from. That helps guys like Chris Jackson and guys like Christian Fulton. And, again, Christian Fulton just played at the top level. I mean, he played at LSU. He just won a national championship last year. And he's played a high-caliber type of games and environment. So I don't think yesterday shook him whatsoever, because when you're playing there at LSU and you're playing against the Alabamas, you know, every year, and you're playing against Georgia and Florida and all these SEC teams, I think you're pretty much prepared for anything. So there's a good reason on why these guys can succeed, especially when they're thrown in the fire as they were thrown yesterday, because you got a great group of guys around you. So I think that's what helped them out tremendously, and I think that's what helped me out earlier in my career, when you get to start along a guy like Chris Hope, who won a Super Bowl, a guy like Nick Harper, who won a Super Bowl with the Colts. That helps you. And then Keith Bullock up front and Albert Haynesworth and Kyle Vanderbosch. You got a good group of core guys that helps the younger guys learn how to pick the brains of these older veterans that have been to the places that you want to go, and that allows you to excel.
We're talking to Michael Griffin, former Titan safety, here on Darren Donovan Chase. I want to go back to something that you said earlier when you were talking about Kevin Byer and tackling, and that I watch a game on TV. You know, I'll go to the game at Nissan Stadium and see it and go, how does that guy miss a tackle? How can you not make that play? You play the position. You know how fast these receivers are, how big these running backs can be, and it feels like they get faster and bigger every year. So it's a simple question, Mike. Just how difficult is it to learn how to tackle properly in the National Football League?
You know what? It's the one thing I just, for some reason, because I say this because I don't want to make that excuse, but, you know, when I first came in the lead, it was like you looked at guys like Bob Sanders and, you know, Sean Taylor and Brian Dawkins, and you used to just be able to leave your feet and don't even wrap up, just throw your body in there. And then later on in your career, it's like, okay, we got all these rules of adjusting the game on how you're supposed to play. Even with the running backs, they used to be able to come downhill and just stick their head down and try to run you over and use the crown of their helmet. But now they got to move their head to the side and use their shoulder. And I think what's allowing these younger guys to play even better is that, you know, it's taught at the college level, let alone taught at the high school level. You know, back in when I played, you hit somebody helmet to helmet, it was nothing. Now you get ejected in college. So you're teaching this at the younger level. And the one thing that I say is, you know, it's you got to take that extra step. When you feel like you're, you know, you got to lunge, you're still a little too far back. You have to be able to take that extra step. And, again, that's the one thing is that he does that time in, time out. He's very patient. And he takes that extra step and he puts body on body, and that's the best way to do it. I mean, the one thing I've always been told is, you know, and I always tell people, you know, if you get ran over and he falls, it still goes under the same category as a tackle, or you can get a big hit and it still a tackle. It doesn't matter how you want to put it. It's just get the guy on the ground, and that's the one thing that he excels in and that I admire most about his game is I know the turnovers is big and it gets glamorized, but, again, when you're a guy that can constantly make tackles and don't miss tackles and add that to your game, especially as a defensive back, that puts you on that top tier of players that, you know, you just can't. Some people are just gifted with it, and he's a guy that's very, very talented in that area.
You were on some defenses that featured Albert Haynesworth, who you referenced earlier, a guy that you had to double team him. You knew that it was going to take more than just one guy to stop him. That opened up opportunity for Kyle VandenBosch and others. When you look at this defense now and what Jeffrey Simmons, everybody, we saw it last night, everybody thinks he can be, and now adding Jadeveon Clowney to the mix of that tag team, so to speak, how big is that for a defensive front?
You know what? Jeffrey Simmons. Man, listen, that guy there, I saw a glimpse of it last year, especially coming off, you know, the ACL. But, man, last night, some of the plays that he made, I was just like, Lord, like, that's amazing. That right there, to me, to be honest with you, I know Jarrell Casey, all due respect. I love his game. He had a phenomenal game last night. You can see he was playing with revengeance and stuff, and I would have loved to see those two guys tear it up. I know Jarrell was banged up a little last year, but those two guys alongside with Daquan Jones, I think, would have been a heck of a tandem right there, the three front. But Jefferson, I mean, he's going to be a guy to be reckoned with. I mean, he has the intangibles to probably be up there with Aaron Donald. I mean, some of the things he did yesterday was amazing. Not only in the pass game, I think there was one play I seen him run down somebody and jump on the back and make a tackle. But right there on that goal line, I mean, if you got one guy that can single-handedly, manly just stop somebody right there on the one, Lord have mercy, that makes everything a lot more easier. So, and Jadeveon Clowney, I mean, you could just tell, I mean, he's a freak of nature. It pretty much speaks for itself. You could tell he's a little rusty. He hasn't, you know, again, there's no preseason. He just signed last week. You know, he's played in last year he played with Seattle, so, you know, he's kind of working things a little bit here and there. But, again, I think when those guys get going and they all start, you know, getting back into the groove of things, I really see this defense as being a top five, top ten defense. I mean, they only gave up 14 points yesterday, and the score should have been totally different. You know, I feel sorry for a future Hall of Famer at the kicking position. But, again, I mean, the team played great. I mean, if you literally don't get down on one another, they stuck together, and they fought all the way to the end. Again, this defense can be a really, really, really good defense.
Mike, before we let you go, 2007, and I know the league's changed a lot since then, that was your rookie year in the NFL.
Thanks for telling me my age.
Sorry about that. I know it's difficult no matter what to be a rookie in the NFL, but when you add on what they've gone through this offseason, not really having an offseason, not having preseason, as you mentioned, I mean, how much can really be expected out of a rookie, not only with the Titans, but overall in the NFL, just because of all the challenges that you usually have and then added with what's going on in this year?
You know what? I would have to say it's to say what's expected. I mean, I think you're going to still expect the same. I mean, these guys, they play at a high level. You saw the young running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, it looked like, you know, he didn't miss a beat from how he played in college. Even when you watch some of these other young guys playing, they all look good. I felt bad for Swift. He dropped the game winner for the for Detroit Lions. He would have had the winning touchdown. But again, I mean, you got to make the best of what you got. Not only are these rookies going through this unfortunate time, but again, everybody's going through this unfortunate time. Because unfortunately, you can feel bad for yourself and say, I mean, I really want it to be this way, but it doesn't go as planned. But, you know, they cut the rosters down before it even got started. You signed a 90-man roster, and you said before training camp you had to drop down to, was it 82 or 80, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
And so some guys just didn't even get an opportunity, let alone those preseason games that would allow some guys to show, you know, might not have been able to excel in practice, but when game time came, they could have really showed their skills. But unfortunately, they just didn't get the opportunity to. So you can look at it at a certain way, but you can also look at it that you're blessed to still be able to have an opportunity to go out there and play, because unfortunately, there were some guys that just didn't even have a chance. And then you also look at guys next year with the Big Ten not playing and the Pac-12 not playing. Unfortunately, there may be some guys that's going into their senior year that may not being able to, you know, show their skill sets to be able to, you know, show their draft status for next year. I mean, can you picture a guy like Kevin Byard who might have been playing in the Big Ten that when you go back and you look, this guy had 19 interceptions, but if he never had that opportunity to play his senior year, he may have never got a look, and we would have never seen a guy like him. So, you know, you got to count your blessings, because at any given moment, this game can be taken away from you. You know, some people felt like they're going to be able to play, and unfortunately you get injured. And again, we saw a lot of injuries happen over the weekend that some guys are going to miss this entire season. So just count your blessings and every opportunity that you get to step foot on that football field, because you never know when it may be taken from you. I was fortunate to play 10 years, but some guys play one, some guys never see one, two, three, four, five, whatever it may be. So just count your blessings.
Well, hey, Mike, we appreciate it as always, and you're absolutely right on that. Enjoy your analysis on the games, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Hey, appreciate y'all. Y'all stay safe and tighten up.
All right. Michael Griffin, former Titan safety, here with us. We'll have much more coming, including Mike Vrabel at the bottom of the hour for his day after the game press conference. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Good stuff from former Titan safety Michael Griffin. One thing that really jumped out at me, and if you've been listening to the show today since we've been on the air at 10 o'clock, is I made no secret or no bones of the wow factor that I had with watching Jeffrey Simmons last night. He was amazing. And yes, we saw glimpses of that last year, but he has turned a corner and taken a step forward in his career. Still very, very, very early in his career. And he looks like a disruptive force. And I bring this up because I was very hesitant to go there, and yet he went there. Because I don't think it's fair. And it's the only reason I did not throw this name out in the same breath as Big Jeff. Because I thought it was really unfair to do that still this early on. And yes, it's still just the first game of the season. But I did think it. And Michael Griffin just said it out loud. And I went, oh, well, that's the same guy I was thinking of last night watching the game. And I'm not saying he's the next Aaron Donald. I don't know. That is not fair. But there are things that you see from him when you've watched Ndamukong Suh, when you've watched Aaron Donald, and we know the list of those guys at that position that completely can take over a game or disrupt a game completely for the offense. He looks like he has all the makings of a guy that can do that. And the only reason I didn't throw out the name Aaron Donald, because I didn't think it was fair, and yet Griff went right there, and I went, oh, well, that's exactly how I felt watching him. And the way he was describing his performance was exactly how I described it today, because he looks special. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's still very early. But I just wanted to point that out, that it was interesting to hear him say and talk about it exactly how I felt last night watching it.
I think Joe Rexroad had a really good description of the goal line stand in talking about Simmons. First, he body slams Philip Lindsay on the first down play. And then on the fourth and one where they try to run the shuffle pass.
By the way, you saw Philip go in and just disappear.
Oh, he just got yanked back.
And then he just gets, zoop. All of a sudden you just see this something really quick get slammed to the ground. just went into a body of men and disappeared.
It's like Mortal. It's like Mortal Kombat. Come here,
and then just you see this body quickly slammed to the ground. Yeah,
you just don't. You think about the physical strength you need to wrap a guy up, going that fast, because he had a little head of steam there,
sure.
Lindsey, and he's not a huge guy, but just
but he's trying to get in,
threw him back.
Zone.
He
yeah.
threw him back. That was amazing. And then this was maybe even more impressive on the fourth down shuffle pass. This is Joe's description. He discarded the center like a rag doll, right? So he's on the other side of the play. He's on the near side. The play goes to the far side. So he's got to go all the way over to the other side of the field, which is mobility. He discards the center like a rag doll, swallows up the pulling left guard and the tight end, Jake Butt, who grabs the pass.
Yep.
Right? So he's actually wrapping up two guys.
I think we're getting the signal from Elijah. Elijah, do we need to go?
Yes.
Okay. Titans head coach Mike Vrabel is now at the podium. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hi, Teresa.
Good afternoon, Mike. Have you had a chance to look at the misses by Gostkowski last night? And was there any kind of common thread? He talked after the game about maybe he speeded up his process a little bit. But and how much do you try to – do you and Craig try to get that fixed this week?
Well, I mean, I think for a guy that's a career 87% you know, field goal kicker, who's done it as long as he has, you know, I think a lot of those corrections are going to be on him, but it's also going to be about, you know, us in the operation and the ability for us to protect and the ability to make everything around him better and have a lot of faith and confidence in Steven and moving forward.
Eric?
Hey, Mike, just curiously, would you consider keeping two kickers on the roster for game day like you did at one point last year, you know, with Tucker McCann on the practice squad now?
I'm sure we would consider a lot of possibilities with the 48 players that we have available to us on the game day. So, you know, that would be something that we would always, you know, consider as whoever gives us the best chance each and every week.
Jim?
Mike, I guess my question centers more about maybe the maturity of your team and just kind of finding a way to make a play when it mattered most. I mean, is that part of maybe learning from games last season, or is it just a maturity level that when plays need to be made, guys are going to make them, or at least that's your expectation moving forward?
I mean, I think you have to be always resilient. In this league, I don't think that you can have a team that's a bunch of front runners that they're only, you know, excited or only play hard or, you know, are only into it when you're winning. It's tough. It's a long process. And sometimes it's not going to go your way. Sometimes things are going to not look too good. And obviously, we've had moments like that before. And it was, you know, it's good to go on the road. It's hard to win in this league. It's hard to win on the road, especially in Denver. And so, you know, I hope that we can embrace those times that are tough and difficult and then hopefully learn from them and play better.
Terry?
Mike, when you watched the film, how did you assess how Jadeveon Clowney did? And I know he played quite a few snaps. Can you talk about, I guess, his presence on the field, what he was able to do?
I think we all have to improve and play better. You know, we all have to get in better shape. And we all have to improve and take the coaching and figure out, you know, how to operate and play better as a unit, whether that be on defense, special teams, or offense. You know, there are some plays that were good and some plays that we'd like to have back from pretty much everybody.
Teron?
Yeah, Coach, the fourth quarter comebacks, they seem to be something that's becoming a bit of a habit for you guys. How do you manage to have that team keep that poise in that fourth quarter, especially like yesterday, you know, at the 10-yard line down and with minutes left?
Well, we work a lot of situations here throughout camp and in practice, which are always good on both sides of the ball. you know, you try not to get too high, too low, try not to, panic, and, you know, have faith in the players and trust in what they're doing and give them calls that they know that they're comfortable with, that they have confidence in, and, you know, being able to execute and being at our best in the critical situations.
And then looking at the pass rush and what the Broncos did with the quick passing game, how much did that kind of negate what you were doing up front as far as trying to get home to the quarterback?
Well, I mean, maybe a little bit, but it also comes down to, you know, creating some more, you know, third and long opportunities. You know, they had a few, you know, third and shorts that they were able to, you know, get the ball out of their hands quick, run a boot, misdirection. And so, you know, it's kind of how the game was going. You know, they had the one drive. I thought for the most part we played okay. You know, I was, you know, I think somewhat curious by the one drive. There were some mistakes and some just unusual errors that that attributed to them going down and answering after we had scored. So that'll have to get addressed and corrected here quickly. And we got a good football team coming in here that played well on Sunday. You know, quarterback was, you know, 95% accurate and gets the ball out of his hands very, very quickly as well.
Paul?
Mike, you mentioned the conditioning. I know some coaches with guys up front think there's kind of a maximum number of plays before they think a guy needs a rest in order to get the most out of him. What's your philosophy on that? I know Jadavian, I think, played 14 in a row at one point. Do you think there's a limit after which a guy needs a rest in order to get maximum out of him?
We're just trying to get in the best shape that we possibly can to go and play and be effective and try to help the team. I'm not sure that there's a number. I think a lot of those things are based on the individual and how it's going.
Jared?
Yeah, Mike, this is kind of the first time talking to you other than after the game yesterday since the Isaiah Wilson incident. And I know you guys put out a statement, but I just wonder, you know, what kind of guy did you guys think he was when you drafted him, and how kind of surprised are you by maybe this pattern of behavior, and how do you kind of get him on the right track?
Yeah, I think that the, you know, we were comfortable with the person that we brought in here. And, you know, mistakes, you know, again, we've been through this. Me personally, obviously, kids being in college, you know, coaching in college, you know, there's good people that make mistakes and there's bad people. And I don't think that Isaiah is a bad person. I do think that, you know, we part of what we do as coaches is to be able to, you know, get these guys to help us and help the team win. But it's also about, you know, helping them off the field and how their growth and the maturity and the men that they become. Certainly we're not, we don't condone that type of behavior whatsoever. It's unacceptable, but, you know, as long as, you know, there's an honest effort to improve, you know, we're going to put forth that effort as a coaching staff and as an organization, you know, help any player with have, you know, any issues that they have.
And just on him, we don't really know him like we would say, know a Tannehill or a Henry or a KB or somebody like that. What kind of kid is he?
I mean, I think that Isaiah is he's a good-hearted kid. He's a good-natured kid. He's been, you know, since the time that I've been with him, you know, he's, you know, been engaged in the meetings. You know, but again, you know, having some setbacks and some adversity early on in any player's career can kind of go one of two ways. You know, you can make some positive change and kind of get this going, or guys, you know, don't, and then they kind of fade away. But, you know, we're all going to face adversity, you know, in anything that we do in life. And this just happens to be with football and then the, you know, things that happen outside of it. So hopefully we can all come together and help, and Isaiah can improve and start helping the football team.
Buck?
Yeah, Mike, red zone offense continues to be a plus for you guys. What did you like about the execution down there last night?
I think guys were dialed in, locked in, and, you know, it wasn't easy. You know, they were number one in the league last year. And again, with a lot of the same personnel and a lot of the same scheme there, it's a good defensive football team. But I felt like, you know, we were decisive with the football. Would have liked to be able to run it in there. But, you know, I thought it was some well-executed plays. I thought Arthur and his staff did a good job with putting the players in a good position. And then it was well-executed.
John Glennon?
Yeah, Mike, I was going to ask you about Chris Jackson. I mean, not only a lot of snaps, but a lot of snaps in the slot. I was going to ask you how difficult is especially that position to learn for a rookie and one who hasn't had, you know, a normal off season.
Well, I mean, there's different calls. There's different coverages. You know, there's different routes that you get in there and you have to sometimes get in there and fit the run. You know, so there's some certain nuances to it that Chris has improved on. And, you know, Christian as well. You know, just Christian has missed some time in there. You know, the one thing that Chris Jackson and those guys, they're willing to learn and improve. And we'll keep coaching them. And I know that they will continue to improve and help us in whatever role we ask them to play.
And just on kind of the whole rookie class in general, of course, missing the OTAs and mini camps and so forth. Do you see that showing up more physically, mentally, both, you know, and obviously it's not this team alone, you know, it's around the NFL, but what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, that we got to get them ready to play. You know, I mean, they're part of our team. They're active. Whatever year they're in, you know, that's our job as coaches is to make sure that, you know, they have the trust and the confidence to go out there and do their job. And we've got to do a better job of that all around. You know, proud of the team, proud of their effort to be able to come out of there with a win. But, you know, we got to improve quickly.
Corey?
How promising for your passing game that you had, I think, four players with at least seven targets, and I think all of them contributed on that game-winning drive.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, the quarterback's job is to find the guy that's open. And get him the ball in a position to catch it and do something with it. And it was good to see, you know, a lot of guys contribute, you know, whether that be on the first and second down game or, you know, the third down passing game or even in the red zone, you know, where we're able to find Prue. So it did seem like, you know, Derek had a couple nice receptions, you know, to help us out of there, even on a check down or something. So it was good, and Ryan's able to distribute the ball. And again, it wasn't perfect, but, you know, I thought to get everybody involved was positive.
Emily?
Non-football related, but I know the league sent out a memo reminding coaches and everyone to wear masks on the sideline. What was game day like in 2020? And is there someone designated to help remind you so you can just focus on the game?
No, we don't have a mask coach, Emily. And it's, you know, I think part of the protocol, it's something that everybody, you know, clearly around the league is dealing with, that those protocols are put in place for, you know, the safety of the players and the coaches and the staff. And, you know, we're going to continue to do our best to adhere to all those protocols, whether they be on a game day or, here in our building here when we meet and how we, you know, practice. And so, you know, I would say I probably have to do a better job of it, you know, just as you're try to talk and communicate to, you know, to a player that doesn't have a headset on. You know, it's easy when you're talking to the coaches, but, you know, when you're trying to talk to a player, you know, sometimes that, you know, needs to be taken down and try to talk to them.
Steve Lehman.
Coach, how good was Corey Davis last night, and how much can an effort like that boost him into helping your passing game this fall?
Yeah, I'm really proud of Corey and his effort, his ability, you know, I mean, to go and attack the football and you know, really help us there in some big situations. You know, I thought that was, you know, real positive to see. You know, he continued to improve. He's a big target with strong hands. Ran some good routes and, you know, really went up and got the ball down there late when two defenders were there, you know, really bailed Ryan out, I think. And so it was great. And hopefully we can get that from Corey and continue to improve. But it was a big boost last night.
And then on a little different note to that, a lot of times you hear coaches say that the biggest improvement comes from game one to game two. Specifically without the preseason this year, do you think that's going to be more pronounced? And what are the biggest areas where you need to see that improvement?
I wouldn't know, Steve. I've only had two of those opportunities this year. This will be three. But, you know, we have to improve. We have to eliminate some of the mental errors and figure out, you know, why they happened. You know, if they beat you, they beat you. But if you're handing them something easy, or you're, you know, if we're missing blocks because we're going the wrong way, we're going to the wrong person, you know, those are things that we have to get corrected. And then as well on special teams.
All right, there you go. That's Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. That was his live Zoom call with the media reacting after last night's victory over the Denver Broncos. We will come back, talk a little bit more about what we just heard, and finish up the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, Coach, the fourth quarter comebacks, they seem to be something that's becoming a bit of a habit for you guys. How do you manage to have that team keep that poise in that fourth quarter, especially like yesterday, you know, at the 10-yard line down and with minutes left?
Well, we work a lot of situations here throughout camp and in practice, which are always good on both sides of the ball. You know, you try not to get too high, too low, try not to panic, and, you know, have faith in the players and trust in what they're doing and give them calls that they know that they're comfortable with, that they have confidence in, and, you know, being able to execute and being at our best in a critical situation.
We just played to Mike Vrabel live here on Darren Donick and Chase. Don't forget, September is Blood Cancer Awareness Month. And the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society is a global leader in the fight against blood cancer. Because cancer knows nothing of pandemics, we must unite as a community. We will bring light to the darkness of cancer by honoring and remember those touched by cancer and by rallying virtually as a community in support of LLS's mission. And that'll be on Thursday, November 12th. For more information and to register, visit lightthenight.org. Once again, that's lightthenight.org. So we learned that Mike Vrabel does not have a mask coach, which was interesting because if he did, I wanted to hear who it was, but apparently he does not have
I would
a
help
mask
with that.
Coach.
I'll be the mask coach.
Yeah.
And does the mask coach just assume the duties, you know, just take over in addition to being the get-back coach?
Right.
Or is that just too much for one coach?
I think that's a lot to ask. A get-back coach and a mask coach? Wearing the same hat?
Maybe that's just too much. Maybe it's like coach and GM. It's just two different things.
It may be too much. Let's start with Terry McCormick's question about Jadeveon Clowney. We know that he played 47 snaps. He was asked about his play, and it seemed very clear. He had a canned answer and really wanted no part of talking about Jadeveon Clowney's performance.
Yeah, two different versions of the Clowney question, and both were met with a very generic, we all have to play better, we all have to be in better shape. So somewhere along the line, he decided he did not want to get into a real evaluation, or at least not the one to share with the public, an evaluation of Clowney's first week.
Right.
It was really interesting. What's the disadvantage?
See, I don't get that.
I don't get it either.
You saw.
You played
in the
47
snaps. I think we all saw.
Like you,
everybody
had
wants to know what he thought. Because
right, there's a reason.
It's a big deal. Yeah,
you played him 47 snaps. I mean, there's a reason he was out there a lot. He's been with you just over a week. So, is it too much to talk about what went into the reasoning on what you guys saw? Why you felt like you gave him a healthy dose of snaps? Is that some competitive disadvantage? I mean, I was really surprised by his answer or lack of, where he really didn't even address it whatsoever.
And that's what's so hard to figure out, because this isn't the first time that he's answered a question that way. But then Isaiah Wilson comes up and he actually gives a really good answer. Like he's very talkative about it. So I don't really understand why he chose to take it that way. I thought Terry asked the right question. I mean, we talked about it, 47 snaps, as you just said, and how big that was. So I don't really understand what the big secret is of answering more on Jadeveon Clowney and his work last night. But you could tell it was just something that he had gone into that press conference planning not to talk about it, and he gave the canned answer.
Not sure on that front, but he was asked.
I do wonder if it's something he knows about Clowney. Like, I don't. Maybe Clowney doesn't like to hear his coach critique his play publicly. I don't know. I just wonder where the wheels were turning. It was clearly calculated that he just didn't want to get into it.
Yeah, I don't know how you could feel that way, but yet you want to be paid high dollar and be paid like a superstar, but yet you don't want people to talk, your coach to talk about you.
Yeah, I don't know. Like if the evaluation is critical, I don't know. Like if he lay out the good and the bad, is he sensitive to that? I don't know. I know he just wants to get the most out of Clowney. It just makes me wonder, because he does go back several years with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why he chose to just truly turn a Jadeveon Clowney question into a team question. I just would not offer up any specifics whatsoever. Yet when asked about Isaiah Wilson twice, got very specific.
Yeah.
What did you guys make of that?
I thought it was a very well thought answer, and the line that's going to, I think, make the sound bites on all the news conferences and the quotes is, we think he's a good person that has made some mistakes, and not he's a bad person. That's the distinction that they're making right now. But I think it's also telling that he said, hey, we've seen guys hit a crossroads. Some guys just don't get it, and we got to move on. Other guys, the light goes on, and you make a great career for yourself. I think it's obvious that they believe that he's a good person, and he has amazing talents in terms of his physical abilities. But I think it's just going to come down to, does he want to embrace the game and what it takes to be a professional and get the most out of those abilities? But I think they still think there's hope, for sure. And as we talked about yesterday, the luxury they have is they don't have to throw him in there right now. They can take their time with it.
They can focus on the other things and getting, you know, getting the off-the-field stuff cleaned up and getting him help. If that's in fact what he needs. So I thought that the second question of what kind of kid is he, what kind of person is he, and Vrabel's answer to that's what really stood out to me, because, you know, as Jared pointed out in the question, we don't really know. I mean, we don't know what kind of person he is. This has been a tough year to get to know these players and these rookies, especially to figure out what makes them tick. And in all reports, as we talked about yesterday out of Georgia, was none of this really came up. So we've all been a little surprised by it. But I did appreciate the honesty there, and that's where I just wish there was consistency. I mean, competitive advantage aside, we don't need a – somebody texted in and said it's very Belichickian. I think it's more Saban. I mean, it's more of a coach like that sometimes, of how he answers some of these questions, that you can tell that he'll talk about some things but doesn't want to talk about the other, and it still just boggles my mind.
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, did you see Belichick's question about playing a game with no fans?
It's like practice.
Yeah, and he just, that's it. He's like, it's like practice, and then that was it.
That was it.
End of answer.
And there's nothing wrong with that question. And
we're on to Cincinnati.
Is it a great question? I mean, you know, but it's
It's relevant
with the
though.
Times. It's relevant to the times.
Yes.
Emily Proud's question about the mask. I mean, it's relevant.
It's relevant to the times. And so, you know, to say it's like practice and that's it. I mean, it's like, come on. Yeah, I don't think he's really like that. Like, he may not answer things, which most coaches are like that, right? It's how you, you know, how you phrase it, or like he will at least give you an answer. Bill Belichick will sometimes just give you one, two, or three word answers,
or just a grunt,
or a grunt, or just sit there and stare at you like that. I don't really think it's that. Yeah, I would say it's more like Nick Saban. I don't know if he pounds his fist on the table, or on the podium or the table, but yeah, I would say I would lean more toward Saban than I would Belichick. But, you know, I guess getting back to the part of, you know, he's not a bad person. Well, I kind of expected that, because if you've identified him as a bad person, I would think we would be talking today about Isaiah Wilson, the first round pick, being cut or traded. You
right.
know, I mean, I think it kind of goes without saying that you haven't identified him as a bad person. If he was a bad person, I probably doubt he's in your locker room anymore. Because that's what we've heard, right? They're looking for, you know, those
team
they're
first
looking
guys.
For right team first guys. Certain guys in the locker room, and a guy who's a bad guy is not a team first guy. So I kind of expected that. So I didn't think that was any earth shattering news that you've determined that, you know, he's a good guy. He's made some bad mistakes, and he's not a bad guy. Like, to me, that kind of goes without saying, because he's still on your roster. But only time will tell if that narrative changes. We'll come back, head over to West End. We'll talk to Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason next.